another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. Special thanks to producer and engineer Rod Akil. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
La ville en fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie. Et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires qui éclatent et rebondissent autour de moi. Et perdu parmi ces gens qui me bousculent, étourdi, désemparé, je reste là. Quand soudain je me retourne,
the dirt bag, NKBOO Community Radio comes from our members and from One Green World, a family-owned and operated nursery off Southeast Foster on 134th Avenue in Portland, providing a selection of fruiting trees, vines, shrubs, and vegetables and supplies. More information is available at onegreenworld.com.
This is KBOO, Portland, Oregon.
Now I'm a farmer.
Well, here we are at beautiful, do you have a name of your, besides Northwoods Nursery?
Well, Northwoods Nursery in beautiful Liberal, Oregon.
Liberal, Oregon. We are live to tape as our ace sound engineer, Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions. And if you're curious about Joe's work, which is plentiful, you can check out his website, bergmanproductions.com. But all three of us have gathered here to record live to tape. We haven't done this before, and it's just like our regular show. We're running from start to finish without any breaks.
It's really fun, Glenn. It's like such a nice feeling to be doing this again.
Well, it's all possible because Joe has a, well, I'm reading the back of his board here, Rodecaster Pro. And it's just like a little mini mixing board, and he's got our tunes already. He's got everything. He's just, if you need any type of production, Joe's your guy. Joe Bergman, bergmanproductions.com.
A miracle on wheels.
Yes, indeed. Well, I don't know. We had some technical problems last month and weren't able to present our program for November. So we are updating that and continuing some of that, most of that, over to this month. And consequently, for last month, then, we don't have any listeners' questions to take care of this time. But we will have the answer to the October Garden Stumper, which was, what is leaf mold? Pretty quick, pretty simple there. Mm-hmm. But we'll also talk about our plant of the month, which is not a plant at all. How's that for a zinger? Also, Jim has provided us with a nice display of cut persimmon to eat, and also feijoa?
Pineapple guava.
Pineapple guava.
Or feijoa.
Feijoa, uh-huh. And we will be sampling those during our our musical breaks. We will be sampling them more during our musical breaks. At half past the hour, we've got a new garden stumper. Also, we will have some ideas for gifts for gardeners, and we've got some good ones there. Also, I will be doing my every 5 years or so list of there must be 50 ways to love your leaves, and our dirtbag dictionary terms has something to do with that. And we'll end with is this part two or part three?
Well, we're going to do part two.
Part two, yeah. Of the kind of the history of Oregon's land use planning laws.
Great.
And, of course, what's annoying me. I'm just going to do that right now because it's annoyed me so much now for 2 months. And that is the increased use of the word right. You'll hear this with interviewees all the time, or more and more, and it's condescending to me. We'll say, well, we did this, you know, we did this, right? And then we went on, did, you know, and then the police did this, right? What? You're just assuming that I'm agreeing with you, right? There's my point right there. It annoys me. So anyway, now back to our
regular program.
Serene programming. Okay, we will also, here's the mailbag, our email address for if you have a gardening question or the answer to the stumper coming up. That is thedirtbag@kboo.org. But also December is our end of the year drive. We are hoping to build on the success that we had in the fall drive, but we didn't reach our goal then, so we're going to try to do that now. So you can make a donation of any size at the KBOO website, which is kboo.org/donate. And that's probably the easiest way to do it.
I'd really encourage people to do this, Glenn. I mean, you and I have been doing this show for over 10 years. The radio station is an invaluable resource for Portland and the region around us, and even people around the world that can tune into it. So
yeah,
please give what you can. It'd be really helpful.
And also that the donation to KBOO and any other cultural organization entitles you to take a matching tax credit at the Oregon Cultural site. So if you give $50 to KBOO, you can also give $50 to the Oregon Cultural Trust and take that $50 right off your taxes. So a dollar to dollar match. So you can do more good with just one donation. But it starts with KBOO.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's get started with our plant of the month, which I mentioned is not a plant at all. And it's something that oftentimes gardeners will spot on their fruit trees, particularly the long-lived apple and pear trees, and that is lichen. And I think to the uninitiated, you might think that it's a disease or something that's or a growth on it that's harming the tree, like a parasite, but it's not. By the way, you know, here we are in the Christmas season, and maybe we should talk about, not this time, of course, but mistletoe. Mm-hmm. That is a parasite, if I remember correctly, that it actually gets its nutrients from the tree. Is that correct? Do I remember that correctly?
Yeah, I think you're correct in that.
Okay.
I mean, lichen just lives on the bark or someplace. But
that's exactly right, and it gets its nutrients from the air. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes we say, you know, that's a good sign of good air quality. You know, oaks will oftentimes have a lot of lichen on them.
Yeah, typically older trees where the bark is more established, the lichen can get a good hold on it.
Yep.
And some shade seems to be useful too.
Lichen is what give rocks their yellow or reddish hue. That's lichen growing on it. I have just a paragraph here on that, and this is because it's interesting here. It doesn't really have to do much with gardening, but although lichens are sometimes mistakenly thought to be a fungal disease, they are actually the combination of two different organisms. Fungal cells make up the main body and structure of each lichen, and algae, or cyanobacteria, give it its green or blue color. The fungal part of a lichen is not capable of creating its own food. Thus, it relies on the photosynthesis in the algae cells for the energy it needs to grow. In turn, the fungus provides the algae with water and minerals and prevents it from drying out. This mutually beneficial relationship is called symbiosis. So, good for both.
What's not to like about lichen?
I think, Joe, the only way you could improve on this is to get a wah, wah, wah recording for when Jim makes his corny puns. He says, I can do that. So, that is our plant of the month.
Cool.
Our non-plant of the month, as we're saying here.
Creature of the month.
Good idea. Yeah. Well, I'm assuming that almost, well, no, not all the persimmon are off the tree. I've still seen some persimmons hanging on in trees, but, you know, we had talked about this in November, which was the perfect month for it, but still, it's a great plant, a beautiful plant.
You know, I was thinking about it after the last show, and I really am in love with persimmons.
Uh-oh.
I mean, you know, they are so nice, and, you know, there's hardly a plant that I think could be more beautiful, especially in the fall when the foliage turns color. The fruit hangs on, these bright orange fruit globes, basically, after the leaves fall. You don't need to spray it. You know, there's no significant pest or disease problems.
Well, I beg to differ there. I know they're ripe when I see a squirrel running down the sidewalk with a persimmon bigger than its head in its jaws.
So you consider a squirrel a pest?
Oh boy, do I.
You can't spray for squirrels.
No.
Well, you know, that's...
need the wah, wah, wah for that one there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, okay. But at any rate, you know, the things that we normally think of as problems with fruit trees,
yes,
persimmons don't have. And that's pretty neat. And if you think about it, or maybe you haven't thought about it, but think about it, the persimmon is probably the most widely grown fruit in the world. If you consider, China, Japan, Korea, Vietnam.
That would have been an excellent garden stumper, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know if I could prove it, though. But it's,
okay,
but,
good point.
But boy, it's so popular in those countries. And we are very fortunate that we were able to bring a bunch of varieties in over the years, you know, after quarantine and all that. And we've been testing them here at our place. And one of our main goals has been to find varieties that do well in our Northwest climate. There's a lot of varieties that require more heat than we have here. So we've weeded those out, of course. But the ones that we have now and the one on the plate is... It's beautiful. I mean,
it's
orange and sweet, and you know, just darn good fruit.
Yeah, and this is much larger than the American persimmons, because persimmon is native to these United States.
Yep. There's an American persimmon which is hardier, so if anybody happens to be tuning in from Minnesota, southern Minnesota anyway, you could grow American persimmons there, but unfortunately, the Asian persimmon wouldn't be happy in that climate.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But the American persimmon is very good too. And I should mention that there are basically two types of persimmons. One you can eat firm like an apple, which typically has a name like Jiro or Fuyu, and then ones that you have to wait till they get soft to eat them. And Hachia, which you can buy in stores, is a type like that. Although I haven't found that Hachia does super well in our climate. It seems to require more heat to get full sweetness. Another very interesting thing that we've discovered after going to a persimmon conference in Spain in 2016, if you take a astringent type of persimmon, the kind that has to be soft before you eat it, and Seijo is a one that works very well for this. We also have a new one, which will be introduced probably another year, called Phoenix. You can take that persimmon, put it in a plastic bag, like a Ziploc bag, a large one, get some CO2 at a brewery place. Or, you know, some people, you know, like,
uh-huh,
we have this canister of CO2, and we fill the bag with with CO2,
uh-huh,
and for 24 hours at 70 degrees, and it removes the astringency from the persimmon, but it's still firm and somewhat juicy, and it's like a third kind of fruit.
Huh.
It's really fascinating, I wish I had some right now to share with you, but it's really an amazing difference.
Hmm.
So anyway, persimmon's a lot of fun, and we've been growing it for years, and you go to Japan, you'll see a persimmon tree in every yard. I mean, as we take the train one time, we did,
oh,
it's amazing. Korea, extremely popular there. People dry them, you know, it's wonderful fruit.
Well, that's persimmon.
Yep.
And the once again, we were sampling them here, and some people peel them, but there's no reason to.
No, I don't. If it has a thick enough skin that needs to be peeled, you probably don't want that variety.
You know, it seems to me that even when the Fuyu type get soft or get real ripe, that the skin is, I don't know if it's just because of comparison now, the flesh is soft and the skin is the same as it's always been, or does it get a little tougher?
No, it's pretty much the same.
Okay.
Just because like when you eat it firm, you don't notice it because it's just like an apple.
Right. Yeah. Right. And that's true. It is like an apple, but it's they're good when they're firm.
Yeah. And I like them when they're soft. And some of the ones like I was mentioning, Seijo, for example, when it's soft, I mean, it's just heavenly. And in fact, Diospyros, the name of the genus of persimmon, is, I believe, literally translated, or somewhat illiterally, is fruit of the gods.
Uh-huh.
But that's a pretty good recommendation.
Yeah. You wonder, you know, when they were named, maybe there weren't as many choices or you know, who knows, but still it rises to the top.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have fruit this time of year.
Yes.
Fresh fruit.
Yeah. Yeah. And what we've been doing is I pick it when it's firm, like the firm varieties or any mm-hmm. of the type of persimmons, and I put them in the cooler, or you put them in the refrigerator, and it's recommended to put them in a plastic bag so they keep the humidity up. They store better rather than just putting them in a crisper or something. Put them in a plastic bag and store them.
Uh-huh.
We've got a lot in our cooler right now. I just keep eating them every day.
Yeah, I'm just about out of my supply, so it was good when it lasted.
Yeah. And I should also mention, since it's on the plate, the pineapple guava, just briefly. That's another fruit that's somewhat unknown in our region, but very delicious, beautiful evergreen shrub. It ripens kind of late, so it's ripe now, still on the somewhere still on the plant. But they do ripen here very well. And
I'll describe the fruit. If it reminds me of a plumb bob. Mm-hmm. You know what a plumb bob is?
Sure.
You put it onto a string, and it's got a point at the bottom. That's what it reminds me of, the shape of it. A big one.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, it's green. Some people eat them. It's a long story with pineapple guava. We've gone to New Zealand 3 times to check this fruit out. We went to Brazil, where it's native. It's just a neat fruit, but you can eat it like a watermelon, like cut it up into quarters and just eat that way, or I'd like to eat the whole thing with skin and all. Unlike a watermelon, yeah. Yes, exactly.
Uh-huh. I didn't know. I thought maybe Jim would go for the watermelon, Ryan, too.
Mm.
A lot of roughage in that, though, the fiber. Fiber, we call it. Jim's eating on the air.
Yeah.
Well, maybe this is a good time to take our first musical break then. Yeah, the theme of our tunes today has to do with breaking down, and two aspects of that. One, that the leaves are breaking down when we get to leaf mold. And then also the leaves breaking away from the tree, which has to do with our dirt bag dictionary terms. So the first tune that we have lined up here is from a group called Superchunk. Every year at the end of the year, music critics and whatnot will come out with their top lists of favorite music. And I pay attention to those and then check out of the library as many as I can of those that I sound interested in, or that sound interesting. And so this is from 2013, this group called Superchunk. Well, it's a pretty good name. Don't know what it means exactly, but this is from their CD, I Hate Music. Now, I don't know what that means either, but anyway, our first tune is called Breaking Down. Thank you. That's kind of catchy. The more I listen to that, the more I like it. Breaking Down from Superchunk, their CD I Hate Music. Well, this is a good time for us to mention once again our end of the year fundraiser, our drive, our membership drive. You can go to the KBOO.org website and select a Donate Now button, which is in the upper right corner. Or you can just go to KBOO.org/donate. Either way, we'll take any amount.
And what other radio gardening show can you listen to and learn about pineapple guava and persimmons and all this fun stuff we talk about?
Well, are you talking about west of the Mississippi or in the entire United States?
I don't know, maybe the entire world.
Okay, zero.
Okay. At least not in English.
Well, that's true. Who knows? That's a good question.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's to get into our garden stumper from last month, we will talk about our Dirtbag Dictionary terms this month, which are senescence and abscission. And once again, I'll just read just a little bit, just a few sentences here, that prior to any natural abscission, that is to say that abscission is when the leaf separates from the tree. But before it separates, it undergoes plenty of changes. For one, the chlorophyll gets cut down, shut off, I should say. And so any color that's in the tree naturally, orange, yellow, red, that was previously masked by the green chlorophyll color is now not masked. And so those colors are able to come through. They've been there all along. It's just that chlorophyll was a bully.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, huh. That's it. But in order for abscission to take place, we need senescence.
Mm.
So here we are. Prior to any natural abscission that may take place, leaves or any other plant organ subject to abscission, such as flowers or fruit, undergo senescence.
That must be like senility, right? Some root of that.
Well, that could be. But
so as we get older, our colors will show more?
Well, it says senescence can be defined as the deterioration that occurs in conjunction with aging.
Mm-hmm.
And it results in the death of an organ or organism. Senescence can occur throughout the entire plant, as it does in annuals, or in only the above ground portion, as it does in perennial herbs. In woody perennials, however, only the leaves senesce, while the bulk of the stem and roots remain alive. That's it.
Yeah, wow, that's a lot to think about.
Tis.
Yeah.
Now, some persons did think about leaf mold, and that would be the last month's, well, 2 months ago in this case, garden stumper. What is leaf mold? Quite simply, and it's very simple, it's just leaves piled up that then break down, hence the theme of our musical selections this month.
Mm-hmm.
You're not mixing it with anything else, it's just leaves, and it'll take 1 to 3 years to break down, and what you end up with is a material that's chock full of nutrients, but mostly carbon, because it takes nitrogen and carbon to break things down quickly, but this is done very slowly. But pound for pound, leaves have probably more micronutrients than manure, with the exception of nitrogen, which is why we use manure a lot, because we need nitrogen in our water-drenched soils. Nitrogen can leach out. So when you just pile up leaves, just give them time and moisture, you end up with a composted consistency of about coffee grounds. Easy to spread, easy to use. It's good stuff.
Nice. Sounds nice.
Yeah. And we did have a winner who, so they were entitled then to a free hand tool sharpening at Cully Farm Store. And we'll have another garden stumper soon. Meanwhile, let's talk about gardeners or gardening gifts.
Well, that sounds like fun. Yeah.
Well, it is.
So I just, so one of the things that, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about that was because I having done this work, this horticultural work for a few years, you know, like
a few decades,
yeah, 40 plus years, you know, I've discovered that one of the tools that I have with me almost all the time, even when I go out to go to eat, sometimes I have a pair of pruners in a holster on my hip. And I don't know why I carry them when I go out to eat, but they're just there.
You
and
never can tell. You need to cut some tough, tough
get
food.
Blackberries out of the way of the door or something, yeah. You know. And so I've learned, for me, what pruners I really like to use.
Yeah.
And I wanted to share that with our listeners. Because,
well, what pruners do you really like to use?
Well, the brand name is Bahco, B-A-H-C-O.
Do you have a pair in your hip now?
I have a pair in my hip right this moment. And the thing that I like about them, a couple of things I like about them, they have a composite plastic handle. I don't know if you call it plastic exactly, but whatever this material is, that it's extremely tough. I've been using this pair of pruners for probably 10 years, and I use them a lot and have zero problem with them. The handles are very tough compared to a very popular brand, Philco, which are also really good pruners. Mm-hmm. They have a plastic coated handle, aluminum handle that's coated, and after a while, that coating comes off.
Or if you drop it. On its handle, that's where mine are starting to...
And the other thing that I like about the Bahcos is they have the blade lock is this little button. And if you've had a pair of Philcos for a while, the little blade lock will get loose and start moving on its own and won't be there when you want it to be.
It's there when you don't want it to be. Right. And then that's why on mine, I took it off. Took it off.
Really?
Because it was just such a pain.
Really? Wow.
So when I put it in my holster, I just squeeze it and put it in, and it stays in there tightly.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So can I handle that there, Jim, while you continue to describe it?
Sure. The steel is excellent. So Bahco is not a brand that's so easy to find. And I'm really disappointed with that. I actually went looking the other day, and the local store where we buy our nursery supplies is discontinuing it because they told me the supplier wasn't supplying them anymore. And I don't understand that. But so I went online and I found a couple of sources for them. And the model I like, and this one I just actually purchased for a friend, is it's a professional model. And the brand or the name is I guess the model number is PX-L3. There's an L2 and an L1, and those numbers refer to the size of the handle. So for a person with decent sized hands like mine, the L3 is great. If you have a little bit smaller hands, the 2 or the 1 might be better. But anyway, it's a really good pair of pruners, and I've been using them for a long time, and I wish that they were a little bit commonly available. But in my searching for the new pruners, I found a place called Pruner Warehouse in Northern California. Prunerwarehouse.com was the website, I believe.
Thepruner Warehouse.com. Yeah.
And this is sort of interesting too. You talked about what annoys you. Sometimes shopping online annoys me, especially if I go to Amazon, where the price on Amazon was $64, free shipping. The price at the Pruner Warehouse for the same tool is $37 and free shipping.
Uh-huh.
And one of the problems...
sounds like a pretty good buy.
Yeah. And when you do a Google search, however, you know, you come up with these... the Pruner Warehouse doesn't show up, probably because they don't pay to be listed or something. I don't know, but it took me a little bit more scrolling down to find them. But yeah, good source. And there's a couple of other online sources that are better priced too than that. So that's one gift
that's
that I think a person, you know, a gardener who wants a good pair of pruners, that would be a good gift for them.
Yeah, I was just thinking in my garden, what things do I find very useful that I wouldn't normally think about? And one would, for a gift for a gardener, might consider getting a roll of it's interlocking plastic. You'll often see them used when street trees are planted, and then posts or poles are pounded in, and then they use these, it's interlocking plastic ties to hold the tree up for inclement weather, which is another thing that annoys me. It might be good for a little while, but if you leave those interlocking things on, or a string or any type of support, they're just going to become weaklings. Because you want them to be stressed by the wind and, you know, I don't know, passersby. But anyway, let them build up some resistance.
Yeah.
Anyway, but anyway, I find this interlocking, these black rectangles that you can interlock the ends into anywhere along the chain, if you will.
Yeah.
And you can reuse them year after year after year. Mm-hmm. And for my raspberries or whatever, blackberries or anything that I'm tying up, even flowers, at the end of the season, I just leave it out there. So it's there on the wire for the berries or whatnot. So that's another nice gift that a gardener wouldn't necessarily think about.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I was also, I think, you know, getting a gift certificate at a local nursery is a really nice thing to do, you know, because, you know, the actual plants themselves that people can go and get, should they choose their own plant, but I like supporting our local nurseries, and they'll appreciate that too.
Yeah. I mean, they're just independent nurseries.
Yeah.
You know, I can't think of a chain, you know, other than the big box stores.
Yeah.
You know, you think of any?
I can't. No, I think I think of like Portland Nursery and Cornell Farm Store.
They might have more than one store, but they're still local.
Yeah. One Green World. I mean, they're great places to support, and they have really good plants, and they're generally ones that grow well here in our climate. So that's a good place to get them.
Yeah, and that's a better choice than the big box stores for plants that grow in your climate. Yeah. Plus, you're likely to have somebody that knows what they're talking about.
That's an interesting also advantage, isn't it?
Right. Okay, So that leads us in then to our, let's take our second musical break now, and then we'll have the garden stumper after that. Let's see, we've got T-Bone Walker up from, this is a collection CD, Stormy Monday Blues, because T-Bone Walker, of course, wrote Stormy Monday, if I'm not mistaken. And this is called I Gotta Break Away, so this is just in honor of all those leaves that are hanging on, but not forever.
Breaking away.
Right. T-Bone Walker just got a nice groove to it.
Yep. Very nice.
Okay, Jim. You know what time it is. That's right. It's time for the Garden Stumper.
Yep. And there it is, the musical intro. So this month's Garden Stumper has to do with something that's happening right now, which first I want to introduce a term. You know, of course, we think about dormancy and what happens to plants during the cold time of the year. And one of the reasons that we can't grow mangoes up here, well, not because of hardiness, of course, too, but a lot of tropical plants pretty much just keep growing year-round. And in tropical regions, it's very difficult to grow plants that we can grow up here, like apples and pears and peaches and plums, because those plants need to be dormant for a while, go through a chilling period. And so what the stumper is, basically, we have there's a period of time that the plant must go through, and it varies depending upon the plant. It could be 600 hours, 1,000 hours, or that's probably about as the max. And the question is what temperature qualifies for those chilling hours? And it's a little tricky because I can't go too much into the trickiness because I'm giving you the answer. But basically, it may not be what you think. But just basically, what temperatures is works? Because if you don't have the right temperature in where you're living, and most of us up here in the Northwest do have it for the plants that we grow. But if you live in California, you have to think about it because growing a regular apple tree in Los Angeles is difficult and probably won't be successful. Mm-hmm. So the answer to the question will probably tell you why.
Okay, that's it. If you have the answer or you want to take a guess at what the answer is, send us an email at thedirtbag@kabu.org. And the winner will get a free tool sharpening of a hand tool at Coley Farm Store in Northeast Portland. Includes pruners, loppers, shears, shovels, and hoes. And there's probably a few other ones. So.
And I should make it clear, what I'm asking for is the range of temperature. It's not a not one temperature, but it's a range. So
it has to be below this range.
Below one temperature and below another.
Okay.
And between those two temperatures is where the chilling hours are accumulated.
Oh, yes, and we'll get more information on that. But if it's below a certain thing, then that does, it's too cold, for example.
It doesn't work, right.
Uh-huh. So it's a more tricky but more intricate answer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, where else are you going to get this information? Well, next month you're going to get this information, but this is a good time to, once again, to say that, bring up the fact that we are in the midst in this month of our end of the year pledge drive or membership drive. And if you'd like to become a member or renew your membership, you can go to kboo.org/donate. Or just go to the KBU website and click on the donate tab or button, which is in the upper right corner. Okay, it's time for, with apologies to Paul Simon, there must be 50 ways to love your leaves. Just grab a rake, Jake. Look to the tree, Lee. Just listen to me. All right, so I'll make this quick here. We've got plenty of time, so Jim gets his time for the Oregon land use. Hey, wasn't that something about Peter DeFazio?
Yeah.
Announcing his retirement.
Amazing guy, 36 years
yeah.
in Congress. Longest serving American Oregon representative.
Ever?
Ever.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Good guy.
Yes. 74 years old, though. It's time for him to do something.
Yeah,
look after himself.
I have to write him a letter, see if he'd like to come up and spend some time in the nursery.
Probably be fun.
Sure. I don't know. I'm enjoying it.
You're older than that, aren't you?
Yeah, my birthday's coming up in a couple days.
Really?
Yeah.
And is this a milestone?
Not one that ends with zero, but
okay.
But it ends with eight. And you can put the one in front. I'm sure you.
He doesn't act that old though, does he, Joe?
88.
Yeah, 88.
It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't believe that. But, but there's a reason that Joe and I came out here.
There is a reason, right? We don't need to go into that.
Yeah. Okay, but anyway. There must be 50 ways to love your leaves. Here we are here. And I've created this decades. I used to write a column for the Portland Alliance, that leftist rag. And January 2005 is when I first wrote this one. So it's 16 years old now. And I've added to it as people, maybe not unlike dirtbag listeners, write in and say, here's another use for those leaves. So. As I say here, there must be 50 ways to love your leaves, but I only have 35 here. So we'll get right on that here. Number one, some of them are pretty obvious. Some of them are kind of overlap, but I needed to get to 50. Number one, use on vegetable beds in the fall when it is too late to plant a cover crop. In fact, I just did that last week. I mowed my lawn just so the lawn didn't need mowing, but there were leaves on it, and I wanted to chop them up. So it was great. It was too late to plant a cover crop, so I put the leaves on there. Number two, use on perennial beds. Leaves can be put on dry to avoid matting. And in fact, you can just leave those on till they're gone, till they break down or till the next year. Number three, use as mulch in the summer. Number four, use as mulch in the winter. Number five, use as mulch in the fall on your beds, then rake off in the spring for use in the compost pile. Get double duty. Number six, mulch in the fall, then leave in place in the spring and plant through prepared holes in the leaves. I do this a lot. I'm going to plant tomatoes, just clear a little hole, plant the tomato, leave the leaves. Number seven, use to kill lawn by spreading a layer of leaves 6 to 8 inches thick. This is known as sheet mulching. In my neighborhood, I have a lot of maple leaves. And they're pretty good size. They overlap and do a great job of just killing the grass. Number eight, with a mulching mower, leave them in place to break down right on the lawn. Number nine, compost by themselves for at least 2 years. The finished compost product is known as leaf mold. It is excellent at holding water. If you put that around your plants, it'll do great. Number 10, use leaf compost as fertilizer. And I've mentioned that most tree leaves have good numbers of micronutrients. Number 11, compost with grass in your compost bin. Number 12, use as bedding in your worm bin, both of which I do. 13, save in a bag in the fall for use in the spring, which is what I do in my basement. Actually, they're just in buckets to use in my worm bin. And I should pause here and say that my worm bin has been in continuous operation for more than 30 years, which is a pretty long time. So these are original or descendants from the original worms that I started with.
What color are those worms?
Red.
Oh.
The red wigglers.
Got it.
Icinia fœtida. Fœtida, excuse me.
Nice.
Fœtid, you know, that's where they get it. Icinia fœtida. Yeah. Number 14, I've already done that. Number 14, uses path material in the winter to keep your shoes clean. 15, use as path material to keep weeds at bay. Okay, you don't have to wait until the leaves fall to the ground to appreciate them, though. On the tree, leaves do the following. Number 16, increase the value of a home, along with the tree, of course. 17, improve air quality. 18, provide privacy and help muffle noise. I should separate those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would give me one more. Number 19, create shade that can keep a home up to 20 degrees cooler in the summer. Number 20, enable a cooling effect brought about by transpiration. 21, create oxygen. 22, use and sequester carbon dioxide. 23, inspire poets. 24, provide a spectacular symphony of color in the fall, e.g., persimmon trees.
Mm-hmm.
25, compel some of us to learn why leaves change color. Hey, we just educated our listening audience today.
Mm-hmm.
I have change, by the way, in quotes here, because we just learned this, and they're not really changing. color.
Right.
Just other colors are showing through.
Mm-hmm.
26, when they are just buds in the early spring, they provide proof that warmer weather is on the way. 27, these now are, while when leaves are still on the ground, they, number 27, provide exercise to those raking them up. 28, tempt kids and some adults to jump in a pile of them. 29, provide work for city employees who clean them up for parks and streets. In the home, leaves can be used, number 30, in art projects. 31, as decorations. Finally, on the international level, leaves, 32, inspired the Canadians to put one on their national flag. Number 33, give the olive branch its peace significance. In other words, if you were to offer your opponent an olive branch devoid of all of its leaves, you would be giving that person an olive twig. What message would that send, I wonder? Number 34, the name of the Toronto Maple Leafs hockey team. And from a KBOO listener, when I last presented this list in 2016, this listener used them in the chicken run and then later used the leaves in the compost. So that is 35 ways to love your leaves. If you have any more uses that I didn't cover there, once again, our email address is thedirtbag@kboo.org.
Did you come up with those, Glenn?
Of course I did.
I think that's remarkable. You must have been, maybe you're driving somewhere you were doing this?
Oh, I think about it, and these days, boy, I have to write things down as I think of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I have a list of three or four more things on for my annoyance list now.
Got it.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned just before you started doing that about why you guys came out here, and I thought I just should encourage people to get their vision checked regularly, because the reason we had to come out here is because my eyes are bad. Let the listeners know that, so that, you know, it's there's lots of worse alternatives to having bad eyesight, but being able to drive is something I really miss now, so
yeah.
I don't do it.
Yeah. And is it glaucoma?
Glaucoma, yeah. And macular degeneration.
And there's nothing really that can be done for macular degeneration to get it better. Is that correct? Or?
Well, that's not totally correct.
I guess there are different types, too.
You can get it a little bit better, and I hate to even get into that.
We don't need to.
Right, but I'm getting shots in my eye.
Yeah.
So
doesn't that give you the willies? Give me a blackboard. That'll feel better.
Yeah. Let's talk about persimmons.
Yeah, but I did want to mention, because a grandparent on each side, maternal and paternal. My grandfather was blind from glaucoma, and my grandmother had it. So I get tested yearly. But it is preventable. I mean, once you figure it out, if you have it, you can treat it.
You can
treatable, I should say, not preventable.
Yeah, but I started treating it when I was 50 years old.
Oh.
It keeps on going slowly, I guess, or something, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's hard to stop it totally, apparently.
Well, that's good, good lesson.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jim.
Sure. You just eat and diet, boy. I mean, you know, we're talking vegetables, and fruit. And you guys out there in the listening audience, you know, high fiber, eat well, eat all that good stuff, because that's what that makes a big difference, too.
Eat the peel.
Eat the peel, right?
That should be our good for.
You should see my breakfast cereal every morning: a mountain of blueberries, goji berries, a sea berry, some real coarse oatmeal, non-fat yogurt. Keeps me going.
I'm a granola guy.
Yeah,
but same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's give one. Well, one more or last mention of our end of the year pledge drive here, membership drive. You can donate any amount or become a sustaining member, which I'm happy to say that I did this year. So every month some amount comes out of my checking account. And you can sign up for that or pledge a one-time amount at kboo.org/donate, or go to the KBOO website, however you want to get there, and click on the donate button. Any amount.
Yeah, help us keep the Dirt Bag and all the other great shows on the air. And I don't know if any of the listeners are like get up early in the morning and miss it, but this morning I was up about 5:30, and from 5:30 to 7 is some of the best music. And also on Saturdays, in the morning on Saturdays.
Yep, it's if you don't like what's on now, just wait an hour until the next program, and
exactly
something will come on. Same with our program.
So you have to wait a little longer for ours.
Right. Okay, so we are ready then for part two of Oregon's land use planning. And go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, you know, and before we do that, Glenn, I thought it, since we talked about it last month and then the show wasn't able to be broadcast, we should mention briefly about cold weather protection of plants.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Just because...
We're going to have it some point.
Someday it might get colder.
Yeah.
I mean, it used to. And I'm not thinking, I'm certainly not preparing that, thinking that global warming is going to keep it warm all the time, but the last few days have been crazy.
Yeah, and we're recording this a few days before the Wednesday that it's scheduled to air.
Right. So. But like it was 62 in Salem yesterday. You said 63 in Portland.
Yeah.
For this time of year, that's quite remarkable.
Yeah, we've set or tied records, I think, in four of the last 5 days from this date. But so we will have cold weather, yes.
Yeah, we will. And the most important thing for super cold weather, if you have potted plants, is to make sure they don't sit outside on a deck or somewhere where temperatures drop into the teens and the roots freeze. And because the pot is not going to hold the heat. If you have it sitting on the ground or it's covered or it's somewhere where it's making contact with warmer, not warm, but at least above freezing things, that will help. But if you have it sitting just out in the open, it's in danger of being lost. And be careful about that.
Yeah. You know, temperatures in the, you know, up to 25, you know, that most plants that are in the ground are going to do okay. I mean, not the above, you know, annuals are, that's going to take out potatoes or anything that have come up in this mild fall that we've had. But the plant will survive.
Yeah, yeah, and most of the, you know, I mean, if you're not planting said mangoes or papayas or something, you're not going to have any problem with the plants out in the outdoors and in the ground. But the potted plants are ones that you have to pay attention to. So we always here at the nursery, we're always doing those preparations well in advance of December, because some of the coldest weather I've experienced. I mean, 1989-90, it got to zero here. Whew. It's the coldest it's ever been in my time here.
Yeah.
But, so.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah.
That's good advice.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to, two months ago, I started talking about Oregon's land use program, and I think it's really a remarkable statement to make about our state that we have this land use system that is quite unique in the country, and I'm so pleased and honored to live in this state and to think of all the people that came before us who implemented these things. And I think I mentioned last time about the legislators and the governor in 1913 that said, well, Oregon beaches are going to be public highways, so people can't own them and you cannot be forbidden from walking on the beach. And we walk on the beach all the time, and it's lovely. And we can thank the Oswald West was the governor who signed that bill, but I'm sure there were a lot of people that were behind him to get him to do that.
So what there have been rules, subsequent rules, that even though they've been designated as highways, you can't drive on most of the beaches. There are some that you can, but did that come subsequently?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll get to that in part six or whatever.
Yeah, and the beaches are, you know, So when Tom McCall was governor, there was further work on protecting the beaches, and probably that's when more regulations on driving on them. In Washington, people can drive more on beaches than they can here, but I personally don't like being on a beach when somebody goes by pretty fast. You know, it's kind of, it doesn't feel good, you know. But so that was kind of the beginning, really, of legislative action. Actually, I think even before that, there were efforts made, maybe even the late 1800s, to start protecting beaches. But then the big enchilada came about started in the 50s, And when people started realizing that there was a lot of danger, threat to our farmland and ranch land and forests, really, and by the time the 60s came around, there was a lot of action being taken in Salem, and people were trying to pass our proposed bills and so forth. And then, as I said, the big enchilada was 1973, which is the 50th anniversary is coming up, which was the passage of Senate Bill 100. And Senate Bill 100 established statewide land use planning goals. And I happen to have them in my hand.
Uh-huh.
And it's really, really a great thing to read, just to think about that, you know, 50 years ago, people were thinking about all this and how to make a more perfect state. Not that Oregon is perfect, but it's it's more perfect than it was. Uh-huh. And so there's like 19 of these goals, and I encourage people, if you're at all interested, to look them up online. It's easy to find them. You just look up Oregon statewide land use planning goals, and you'll see them. And just looking, like, number one is citizen involvement, which means that they wanted people to be involved in this. This wasn't just going to be something that came down from the top. It was going to involve everybody. Everybody that lives here has a stake in it. If you want to have clean air and water, if you want to be able to grow your own food, to drive out from Portland and drive into farm country, you know, you have a voice. And out here in our rural part of Clackamas County, I was chair of the local CPO, which is Citizen Planning Organization. And every county should have something similar to that. And you can it's pretty easy to find and become a member, and you can meet with your friends and talk about issues that come up. And they commonly come up, constantly come up around people that, you know, somebody wants to put a house on the edge of a river, or battles we fought out here were like the local city wanting to expand its urban reserve, which means that it could build out three times the size of it is right now. A city that really has hardly any jobs. It's just a bedroom community, but just build more houses on farmland. And that really hurts farming, because the farmers who live on that land that's inside that urban reserve, they're start thinking about, well, what's going to happen? What's my future going to be here? So citizen involvement is a remarkably good thing to have.
Yeah.
And then, of course, number two is basically land use planning. So land use planning essentially says, okay, where are we going to have different things? What should go in this region? What should go in this location? What should go in that location? And that's where, again, the citizens get involved in that and so forth. But what the part that's most interesting and important to me and to the rest of us out here that are making our living farming is keeping farmland. We had we'll talk about it more in the next show, but in the mid-2000s, we had the biggest threat ever to our land use planning system, which was Measure 37, which in our region, there were people proposing 300-unit subdivisions on farmland.
That's right.
Out here.
I remember that.
Crazy. And thankfully, a lot of people got wind of it. The Oregonian was doing a really good job of publicizing this, talking about the dangers of it and so forth. So we were able to defeat it, but with another measure 49 that supplanted that. But anyway, farming and agriculture and all that's a real basic part of our state, and I'm really glad that we can still do it. And I will be happy to talk some more about this at the next time, our next show.
Part three. Coming January.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Glenn.
Well, that's it. We're out of time. Our big thanks to Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions, bergmanproductions.com, with his wonderful new recording board.
Could I take 1 second and say I have this little flyer I created about land use planning in Oregon and stuff, and I'd love to send it out to anybody who would like it.
Okay.
And jim@northwoodsnursery.com is my email address, and write to me and I'll send you a copy of this little flyer.
Okay. All right. We will be back in January, whenever that is, new year, 22. Jim will be 1 year older.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we will go out today with our last musical selection in the Breaking Down series. And this is from Ron Levy from his CD B3 Blues and Grooves called Gimme a Break. Thanks for listening. Be well.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy miércoles 8 de diciembre del 2021. La variante del coronavirus Omicron ya está en todas partes y las prohibiciones de viaje no detendrán su propagación, dijo el principal funcionario europeo de la Organización Mundial de la Salud, mientras el arzobispo de Canterbury pidió la eliminación de un apartheid de viajes. A medida que se detectan un número creciente de casos y la evidencia sugiere que la variante Omicron se transmite más rápido que Delta, 43 países de la región europea han impuesto restricciones de viaje. Pero el doctor Hans Kluge, director regional